We wish one another Happy New Year every year, but I don't think anyone has ever said to me, and I don't think I've ever said to anyone else, Happy Epiphany. It's one of the big three Christian holidays, Easter, Christmas, and Epiphany. How does that feel? Happy Epiphany. I wish you a blessed Epiphany. What does that even mean? What the Christian holiday of Epiphany commemorates is the revelation of Jesus as the Messiah to the Gentiles. In a Christian church today, you'll hear readings about the visit that the Magi make to Jesus. You'll get to sing We Three Kings. You will not get to sing that here. When Jesus was born, he had his Jewish family around him. He had his Jewish community around him. The Magi are kind of the first outsiders to discover Jesus the Savior. My own Unitarian Universalist theology is rooted in the natural world and in humans as natural critters in and of that world. And so when I hear the word epiphany, what I think about is the experience of epiphany. What I'm curious about is the experience of epiphany. To have an epiphany is to experience the discovery of a whole new world. You feel the world is one way, and then epiphany, and the world is different. Your experience of the world, even your experience of yourself, perhaps, is different. To have an epiphany is to accomplish this major change. Now, I do believe that the nature of life and reality is change. As James Baldwin says in another of his essays called Nothing Personal, he says, "For nothing is fixed. Forever and forever and forever it is not fixed. The earth is always shifting. The light is always changing. The sea does not cease to grind down rock. There is nothing more natural than change." Change can be enjoyable sometimes. My wife, Kristen, and I spent our New Year's weekend by rearranging our apartment. We took everything that was in the closet that I had been using as my robe. We took everything out of that out, and we cleaned it up, and we took everything that was in the closet that Kristen had been using as her wardrobe. We took all of that stuff out, cleaned that up, and then we switched them around, and all of my stuff is now in the closet where her stuff used to be. I've only gone to the wrong closet like once or twice when I wanted a new shirt to put on. I'm getting used to it. It does feel a little fresher in the place now, although there are still, I admit, yes, papers still kind of strewn about the living room because we need to go through them because you can't just, this is part of the deal. You got to go through that stuff. But it feels like this change, this little change, is just a little bit of something that's going to help us live the way we want to live just a little bit easier. Change can be good, and nothing is also more natural than, I think, resistance to change. Change is difficult, and this is why we make New Year resolutions, because we know that it takes resolve in order to change. I used to be really good at getting exercise regularly, and the pandemic just got rid of that completely. I've been wanting to get back to it for a while now, but last week was the first week since March of 2020 where I went to the gym 3 times in 1 week. There, 1 week. All right. I'm going to stick with it, but it's going to take some resolve, some commitment. The thing about epiphany, when I hear stories of epiphany, the thing that always strikes me is it's, on the one hand, it's this huge change, and on the other hand, it seems to be something that just kind of happens. Change is great. It just happened, this huge change, and it just happened? How does that work? James Baldwin wrote about an epiphany that he had in an essay that he called Why I Stopped Hating Shakespeare. He starts this essay by describing what had been his negative opinion of Shakespeare. He says, "Every writer in the English language, I should imagine, has at some point hated Shakespeare. has turned away from that monstrous achievement with a sick kind of envy. In my most anti-English days, I condemned him as a chauvinist, this England indeed. And because I felt it so bitterly anomalous that a black man should be forced to deal with the English language at all, should be forced to assault the English language in order to be able to speak, I condemned him as one of the authors and architects of my oppression. And then Baldwin confesses, "Well, I was young and missed the point entirely, was unable to go behind the words and, as it were, the diction to what the poet was saying. I still remember my shock when I finally heard these lines from the murder scene in Julius Caesar," which I'm not going to read to you. You can go check that later. But he does talk about this play and this new appreciation that he has about this Julius Caesar play, which I've never read, actually. I've read lots of the other ones. What he finally hears, what Baldwin finally hears in this scene, in this Shakespeare play, is this. He says, "That lofty scene, in all its blood and necessary folly, its blind and necessary pain, was thrown into a perspective which has never left my mind. Just so, indeed, is the heedless state overthrown by men who, in order to overthrow it, have had to achieve a desperate single-mindedness. And this single-mindedness, which we think of, why, as ennobling, also operates, and much more surely, to distort and diminish a man, to distort and diminish us all." He hears something in the Shakespeare that speaks to his present moment, that helps him to understand his world, helps him to see something about his world all of a sudden. And I'm not quite sure how that happened. It just kind of happened for him. When I read these words of Baldwin with that concept of epiphany on my mind, those words made me think about desperate single-mindedness. Why do we think of it as ennobling? It made me think of the January 6th insurrection, because that's been on my mind this week too. And, by the way, traditionally, Epiphany is celebrated on January 6th. A day of epiphany for us all, it should be. Describing his new understanding of Julius Caesar, that Shakespeare play, Baldwin says, "And the terrible thing about this play is the tension it relentlessly sustains between individual ambition, self-conscious, deluded, idealistic, or corrupt, and the blind, mindless passion which drives the individual no less than it drives the mob." I just see images of people storming up those steps on January 6th, 2 years ago. And as much as the January 6th insurrection was an attempt to make a huge change, they wanted to overthrow the results of a legal election, I've also thought that the attempt to do that comes from an unwillingness to change. It comes from a resistance to change. The people committed to the big lie of the stolen election feel that the world has changed around them, and they object. They refuse to acknowledge it. They refuse to acknowledge the world that exists beyond their own imagining, that there is a world that exists beyond their own imagining. They refuse to think that they might be wrong about the world or wrong about themselves. They refuse to think that the story they use to explain the world might be mistaken. They refuse to think that they could be fabricating this story about the country and about who they are. And of course, now I can't help thinking about poor George Santos, right? Fabricating his whole life that he put together to get elected, I assume, this new congressperson, now duly sworn in as congressperson representing one of the places on Long Island. I think about his refusal to admit that he lied about his background. I think all he does admit to is that he did a little embellishing of his resume, right? Everybody does that. He couldn't possibly be wrong about himself, mistaken about who he is, about what he did. Baldwin gives me an insight about this, too. In his essay called The Creative Process, he tries to describe what it is that an artist does. And of course, in order to describe that, he describes what people, what the rest of us, most of us, most of the time do. In particular, Baldwin laments the person who is locked in the prison of their undiscovered self. The prison of their undiscovered self. I love that phrase. Here are Baldwin's words. "We know in the case of the person that whoever cannot tell themselves the truth about their past is trapped in it, is immobilized in the prison of their undiscovered self. We know how such a person, in such a paralysis, is unable to assess either his weaknesses or his strengths, and how frequently, indeed, he mistakes the one for the other." For some reason, it's just an image of the floor of the House of Representatives is flashing through my mind. We make mistakes. And here's, I think, the connection to Epiphany. If we won't allow for the possibility of a mistake, if we won't allow for the possibility of a mistaking, we shut ourselves off from the possibility of epiphany. And that realization feels a little bit like an epiphany to me, helps me understand something differently than it felt before. In our willingness to admit, I could be wrong, we can find renewal, growth, epiphany, change. So have you made mistakes? Hallelujah! You know that you do not know that all there is to know about yourself, or that you don't know all there is to know about the world. You've allowed for the possibility that what's at the heart of us is a mystery. Baldwin, as an artist, is committed to exploring, quote, the mystery of the human being. Most of our day-to-day living doesn't tend to acknowledge that mystery. As Baldwin says, society must accept some things as real, but the artist must always know that the visible reality hides a deeper one. A society must assume that it is stable, but the artist must know and must let us know that there is nothing stable under heaven. What allows us to meet changes and to ride the flowing currents of the river of this life is the willingness to admit that there is a world beyond our own imagining. We don't have everything figured out, not about the world, not about ourselves. The final word, we admit, is not ours. Not everything is ours. And yet, perhaps we can open to the realization that Baldwin attributes to Shakespeare the poet. The greatest poet in the English language found his poetry where poetry is found, in the lives of the people. He could have done this only through love, by knowing, which is not the same thing as understanding, that whatever was happening to anyone was happening to him. Oh, that we might all have that epiphany. Whatever is happening to anyone is happening to me. Shakespeare, Baldwin imagines, walked his streets and saw them and tried not to lie about what he saw. His public streets and his private streets which are always so mysteriously and inexorably connected. But he trusted that connection. We can let go of the take we believe we have on ourselves and the world, and trust instead our mysterious and inexorable connectedness. Baldwin's epiphany about Shakespeare, his willingness to admit that he was mistaken, his willingness to let go of his take on Shakespeare, brings him to feel that as a poet, Shakespeare opened himself to a responsibility. These are Baldwin's words. And his responsibility, Shakespeare's, which is also his joy and his strength and his life, is to defeat all labels and complicate all battles by insisting on the human riddle, to bear witness as long as breath is in him to that mighty, unnameable, transfiguring force which lives in the human soul. How can we open ourselves to the possibility of epiphany? By owning that we do not own it all, by acknowledging and letting go of our mistakings. So my prayer today goes something like this: I claim no take on you. I admit to my mistakings of myself and of others and of the world, and I open to renewal and refreshment. I celebrate the transfiguring force which lives in you and me. You and I and this world are always changing, and I will not lie about it. We are inexorably connected, and I trust that connection. You are a glorious mystery. Happy Epiphany. Happy Epiphany.